name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. My guest tonight is Michael Breen. He's been on before. He has some very fascinating stories about things that kind of go bump in the dark when you're traveling, especially when you're driving at night, things like that. So we're going to talk to him about that. So, Mr. Breen, welcome back. And
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, well, tell me about your studies and what got you into studying this type of thing.
Well, you know, I was a good boy, social scientist in college, prepared to do all the way through a PhD in social psychology and, you know, steeped in the methodology and well-behaved and, like I say, a good boy in social psychology. And then I realized that was terrific, and I did my PhD, and I obeyed all the laws of being a graduate student and being, you know, behaving properly. Mm-hmm. And then I realized there's more to life than what you learn in academia. Mm-hmm. And in those days, I was firmly standing on the dock of academia and social science, doing everything the right way, publishing articles in scientific journals, and yet haunted by the idea that there was so much more going on outside of my academic fishbowl, shall we say, that I was in. And I just wanted to be honest with myself. And then I started dabbling in other areas than strict social science methods and scientific investigation. And suddenly I found, my God, I got one foot on the dock and one foot on the rowboat. And how am I going to survive this?
And so, what did you come up with? Obviously, you've done really
what well. I came up with was I could be honest with myself. I can be my own man, so to speak. And why not look into things that don't strictly fit in the traditional science boxes? And I looked outside the box. I let myself step into that rowboat, so to speak, and kept an open mind. At the same time, I borrowed one of the famous ufologists, UAPologists, Stanton Friedman, talking about the so-called gray basket. In other words, the gray basket was where you put things in and pulled things out of as you began to think about things and look at them more seriously or discard them in the wastebasket or let them simmer in the so-called gray basket as you learn more and more about other things that don't strictly fit into the accepted scientific ways.
Okay, cool. Very cool. Very cool. So how did you get involved, you know, looking into traveler stories and things like that?
Well, I was on my way to becoming a clinical psychologist, and that is someone who really works with people's disorders and trying to adjust and adapt to life. And before I finished my master's degree, I had gone to Europe. And I'd gotten bitten in the okole, which is the Hawaiian word for no more translation is needed. But I got bitten by the travel bug. And I began to realize this is really an interesting subject to me. Travel is so important. We meet people all the time from other places. We need to understand what other people are like. We need to understand how we fit in when we go to strange places. We need to know a lot more about our interaction with other people that aren't more or less just like us in our own environments. We have to get out and understand how to relate to other people. Now, isn't it kind of interesting that a little bit of a stretch from that is, hey, what about beings from elsewhere or else when? That don't fit into our normal way of relating to other people. What about aliens? Are there aliens in this vast universe of at least 2 trillion galaxies according to Brian Cox, the astrophysicist. So I began to think all things travel, yet in the back of my mind, I had the idea people are experiencing UFOs, people are experiencing paranormal things, people are having ghost or entity experiences. There seems to be a whole universe out there of other possible ways of interacting with other intelligences, and we really need to spend some time and begin to look at these things seriously.
Well, there are, you know, it makes a lot of sense. Like you know, with the number of truckers that are on the road, right? You got a lot of people traveling at night. My dad used to travel at night because it was cooler back then. You know, back in the days of no air conditioning on vehicles. I remember being put in the back seat so we could travel up to, you know, up north. But I mean, there's a lot of people on the road at night, and you know, in my own experience, because I always have jobs where I have worked late. You know, I've been coming home late at night, and I've seen some really weird stuff. Like when you talk about UFOs, I remember one night driving home and looking at this cloud. I just happened to look up, and the whole cloud lit up, and then something shot straight up into the air. It was kind of like that movie Nope, you know, with the aliens came down. Only this one went straight up. So to this day, I don't know if it was one of ours or what the heck I saw. But I mean, there's some weird stuff out there.
Right, and to your own self be true, right? To thine self be true. And the point is, you know for yourself that you had these experiences. Mm-hmm. And it's important not to be talked out of it or let people talk you out of it just because they can't necessarily fathom it. Right. And after all, you know, our system of law, our legal systems, in America and the free world, lots of other places around the world, relies on a group of people like ourselves making honest decisions about the fate of other people. Mm-hmm. So our legal systems depend on accepting what a panel of witnesses or jurors decides in the fate of people who are accused of crimes and so on and so forth. Right. So if we're going to be honored for our decisions of what we make that have to do with the fate of other people, then just as well, I think we need to be taken somewhat more at face value in terms of some of the weird things we're perceiving, Especially since so many people are having these experiences. You can't just write it off and say, I won't accept some of these opinions of people because it's just too weird for me to accept, but mm-hmm. I'll accept their decisions on the fate of other people in terms of our laws. There's a slight disconnect there. And I think we have to take people a little more at face value, even with some of the strangeness that they're experiencing. Cannot just simply dismiss it out of hand or say our existing knowledge of science and the universe is enough that if we say it's too weird and isn't real. We can't accept that anymore.
Right. And like you say, there's just so many people that see this stuff, and a lot of it's similar. You know, it'd be different if they were seeing different things and you know, the stories were hodgepodge, but a lot of these stories that people have are similar.
So not everything fits into a few neat categories either. For example, the UFO sightings by the Nimitz carrier fleet. For a long time, we were watching these videos, these films that were taken by pilots. We were listening to radar operators telling us that these things are performing with capabilities that we just don't understand. All of a sudden, we're confronted with a stretched reality that we're not used to. And somebody's got to look at this. Somebody's got to begin to think, well, these people aren't all crazy. And more people are stepping forward and coming forward with strange experiences. Can't just simply write them off or categorize them necessarily very easily into neat little boxes. We've got a whole strange reality going on out there, which we don't seem to have exactly all the tools or the right tools to really be able to understand it all. We have paradigms that don't seem to work as much anymore with all the weird things that are happening to people who we have to take a little more seriously.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. What types of stories have you been hearing, the more recent stories?
I've been hearing, I've been focusing lately on revising my original book on ghost encounters. I have a series of books called The Road to Strange. Mm-hmm. And mainly these divided somewhat arbitrarily into the paranormal, the UFO phenomena, mm-hmm. and ghost encounters. I'm not saying they're all cleanly separated, but mm-hmm. I have one book on travel tales of the paranormal. In mm-hmm. other words, people who are in other cultures or traveling around, away from their homes, having these experiences. So that's Travel Tales of the Paranormal, which I jointly wrote with Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She invited me to co-author a couple of books with her. And we also did one on UFOs, Aliens, and High Strangeness, The Road to Strange, UFOs, Aliens, and High Strangeness. Then we lost Rosemary in 2019 too early. She left us. She passed on. And I still have loads and loads more stories that she and I would have looked at together and decided what will be our next book in the Road mm-hmm. to Strange series. So, and it's funny, she always said, Michael, if you publish a book, don't make it more than 250 pages. That's about all that a lot of people really want to handle. Mm-hmm. just a regular book, 250 pages. And, of course, I had so much more material that she and I would have gone over together. So one, I did two more, and they all both had like 700 pages in them. I broke Rosemary's law of the 250-page limit. And one of them was The Road to Strange, The Contiguous Universe. And there I pulled stories together that involved people having multiple experiences. So not just one UFO experience or one strange ghost story, but people that seem to have a number of things happening to them to see, like if I pulled these together and looked at them, what could we learn about that? What is it about people having multiple experiences? Is it more valid, less valid? What do you do with that? And so that book, The Contiguous Universe, has about 42 kind of case studies. Mm-hmm. Rosemary's in that one, and I'm in it. I'm in it because of my paranormal types of experiences. Mm-hmm. And finally, I had so many more stories that people told me of all kinds of strange phenomena that didn't necessarily fit easily into the mm-hmm. paranormal or the UFO slot. And there came out another 700-page book. And that one, interesting, is called, I had to try to be really clever, A Psychic Reader, just having a whole collection. The cover has a person looking at a crystal ball. And just the ones I couldn't fit neatly into any other category. And finally, I'm revising my ghost stories, ghost encounters, broadening it somewhat to The Road to Strange Ghost Encounters, because it involved people not only traveling, but a collection of hotels that would have shuddered at the fact or at the idea that someone would dare tell them that they heard that the hotel was haunted, and mm-hmm. they would go, shh, don't talk about it. You'll scare people away from our hotel. And now the paradigm has shifted. Oh, here's the ledger. Look at all the things that have happened at this hotel. Right. I've been in at least two hotels that have a book full of stories. They want people to report these stories, and it's a draw. Let's face it. Mm-hmm. I've known people that have sought out the most haunted room in a hotel because they wanted to stay there overnight, and they wanted to see what was going on. So there you go. So five books in my Road to Strange series, and I'm revising the one on ghosts as we speak.
Fascinating. And as we speak about ghosts, I can tell you a couple of stories if you want to hear them.
Oh, I would love to hear them.
That happened to me. Love to hear them. Well, my friend and I, back in the old days, back when there was no ghost hunting shows, you had In Search Of, you know, you had maybe some mysteries if you were lucky. Mm-hmm. And they used to have this one particular camera that all the ghost investigators at that time were using. And I wanted it so bad, and I finally got one. And so my friend and I decided to go up to this known haunted location up in the Gold Country here. And there's it's called a Vineyard House. And across from this Vineyard House, there is a cemetery. And there's a big story surrounding this place that one of the original owners of the place got syphilis in his brain. And he was angry all the time. So the wife chained him up in the basement of the house and kept feeding him and stuff. He passes away. He gets buried in the cemetery across the way. And, of course, she passes away eventually, gets buried in the cemetery across the way. Well, the legend has it, she goes back to the house, and like if you stay overnight over there, she'll tuck you into bed and different things like that. She'll walk around the house. But she walks back and forth from the house to the cemetery across the road. So we go driving up there in the evening, and I'm thinking, okay, we're going to stop by the cemetery. I'll take some photos and see if I can pick up some orbs or whatever, you know, with this camera. And when we got up next to the house, I got the most uncontrollable feeling of fear. And I heard a voice say, "Go home." And so I drove all the way up the hill. There's a monument to Sutter. It's in the town where gold was discovered in California, in Coloma. Drove up around the statue, came down the hill, and all I could think of was, I'm out of here. So I've got my eyes glued straight ahead. My friend that was in the car with me, as we got near the cemetery, she says, "Hey, there's a fog at the edge of the road." And I said, "I don't care." So I drove all the way home, still had to pry my fingers off the steering wheel. The fear was there for about 20-30 minutes after I got home. Now, was that the woman that was crossing the road? You know, that fog that my friend saw? I mean, I sure felt that fear, you know, as I'm driving.
Yeah.
And then again, I was up in the hills when I was working for a newspaper, and it was Halloween time. We were doing a story on my paranormal team. And we were going up to the cemetery up in this town called Georgetown. And coming up from Sacramento, there's a small little road you can take to get up to the cemetery. And I had a psychic in the car with me. And it used to be I would have a camera filming out the window all the time. But I didn't this night. And as we're driving, this big, tall shadow man walks in front of the car. And he was so dark that he blocked the headlights. Totally blocked the headlights. There was nothing coming out.
Did you slow down?
Yes, I did. And I watched him go across, and he went up the hill. And so we pulled over to look. And for anything human to get up that hill is impossible. It was too steep to even try to make that walk up the hill. But he definitely walked across in front of my car and went up this hill.
Now, there was it only you in the car? I think you said there was...
It was myself and one of our psychics at the time. So there's a witness. There's two witnesses to this.
Well, that's what's interesting, isn't it? When there's more than one person, and I've had heard plenty of accounts of more than one person involved. Mm-hmm. For example, a married couple living in a house where they both hear walking going on, walking, and the husband who's dubious goes and looks and searches the whole house and nothing, but they both heard the walking. Wow. More than one person. Now, what do you do with them? Well, there used to be an expression in French, folie à deux, like craziness of two people or more. But, you know, you have to consider that. You know, it used to be, oh, okay, we have multiple witnesses. You know, that's what's important. But then maybe two isn't enough, or maybe two people can be deluded at the same time. There's always going to be skeptics, but that's understandable. But you also have to be somewhat open to the idea that the paradigm of how we evaluate information is going to expand and grow and develop into something different from what we were taught to expect. That's a great story. Now, could you say a shadow man?
Yes.
Could that have been a Bigfoot entity of some sort? Or, you know?
I don't know. It was definitely a man. I mean, because we both went, oh my God, it's a shadow guy. You know, and it's not the first time that I'd seen one at that point, because I was at a hotel and I was doing an EVP session, and one of my investigators said, hey, there's someone coming up behind you, and I just kept doing the session. And this is like, we were in the dark, and there was a lamp coming in through the window or the door of the hotel, so you could see pretty clear. And he walked to within about 20 feet of me, turned to stare at us, and there were 10 of us. That one you'll like, because there were 10 of us in the room, and we all saw him standing there. And we chased him out, and he went out, and we saw him go through the glass front door. And then he returned and came back the other way. But this one with the car was definitely...
So he was interacting with you.
Yes, yes.
That's interesting.
So I don't know what he wanted, what the deal was with that, but that, you know, that's what he did. That's what he did. And it was the first shadow. I think that I saw him before I saw the one on the road. I think he was the first one I saw.
And you're sure they were different?
Yeah.
You think they were different?
Yeah, yeah. And the one on the road, definitely.
Whatever they were... Were they similar?
Yeah. I think they were similar in height and everything.
So, you know? They could have been two of whatever they were.
Yeah, two of whatever they were. Could have been, you say, it could have been him from the hotel for all I know, because we were out there. But the thing I can honestly say about it was that when he walked in front of the headlights, and I could see clearly, like around him, right? There was no light emanating from the headlights from where he was standing. It was like a black hole.
So it's hard to know what to make of all of it, but you have to allow for the possibility that these are really being perceived by you, and so with so many other people, and so much variety of entities, whatever they are. There's a whole universe out there, probably, of things that we don't have much of an inkling of yet. Why? Because we don't have the framework, say the scientific knowledge, or the framework to plug things into and understand the breadth of it. And I'm not saying I know what it is. We don't know what it is, but we're perceiving it, and we need to deal with it. Can't just write it off and say, oh, it's nonsense. That's where I've come to, as have many people like yourself and others. Can't just ignore it because it doesn't fit in with what we think is acceptable or the science of the day.
Now, in your
That's
studies,
a great
when you
story.
Thank you.
Yeah.
When you look at old hotels, do you see anything, any common things in there, you know, as far as these entities that we're seeing?
As far as myself, I recall having visited at least three or four hotels that, as I, let's say, got off my cousin's boat, we were boating between islands out here in Pacific Northwest. We went to San Juan Island and in Roche Harbor and saw the Hotel de Haro looming. I said to myself, in at least three or four instances, my God, I'll bet these hotels are haunted. There was something about them that caught my attention, and I had that feeling. Now, it's not etched in stone. I'll give you another example. The Crescent Hotel, the famous Crescent Hotel in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, which has been the home of the Eureka Springs UFO Conference year after year. I went to 20 of these, all the way to Eureka Springs, Arkansas, where bunches of friends would meet, have a Thursday night dinner before the conference. And Linda Howe used to go there. All the people who were involved in cattle mutilations used to come. We used to talk into the wee hours of the morning with all these people. Well, we were driving in the fog and the mist downtown in the lower area of Eureka Springs, coming up towards the Crescent Hotel. And I looked through the trees and the fog, and I saw the looming Crescent Hotel up in the distance, gray and rainy and foggy and misty. And I said to myself, maybe to the other people in the car, boy, if that doesn't look haunted, I don't know what it is. And then I find out it's the famous haunted hotel of Eureka Spring, one of the acclaimed most haunted hotels in America.
Now, my question to you is this. Do you think that was just a feeling that you had, or do you think you might be intuitive?
I think that my form of the paranormal is that I get a situational awareness of some things that feels to me to be qualitatively different from normal reality, so to speak. I'll give you one quick example.
Okay.
Or two quick examples, because these are fun. These are, well, wasn't fun at the time. I'm traveling in Europe. I was working on a travel guide that I'd done for different cities at the time, sightseeing by public transportation. And I'm in Barcelona, and I park my car out in the suburbs and take the metro or the train into town, so I don't have to bother with my car, you know, parking. Barcelona's a big city, and it's hard to park, and so on and so forth. So I park it along a main street. Okay, so I'm in Barcelona for the day, researching the travel guide that I'm doing. And I'm ready to go back and get my VW bus. But I'm getting these feelings of anxiety. And the closer I'm getting to where I parked my van, the more anxious I'm getting. And it was a qualitatively different kind of anxiety and fear. I couldn't pin it down to anything. I just got more and more anxious and fearful. Finally, we get to the little suburban town. I get out of off the train, and I walk to my bus, and I see broken glass in the street next to my bus. The door is open, and I see a side window is broken. And I'm wondering, God, this is what I was perceiving. And an elderly Spanish couple came up to me. They'd been waiting. And they told me, we saw this guy jump out of a car, run over to your bus, break your window, open the door, and your alarm went off for 3 hours. They jumped back in the bus, into their car, and ran off. Nothing was taken, but I had to get the batteries recharged and the glass window fixed. Nothing was taken. But that, to me, was qualitatively different. And I knew something horrible had happened in advance of even, you know, having any idea. And one more quick one of this nature. I'm driving around the mountains of northern Italy. I think it was Cortina d'Ampezzo, someplace like that, up in the mountains of Italy. And I'm driving around curves and mountains, and I'm getting the same sort of unease. What is it that's making me feel frightened, scared even? Suddenly I come around the bend, and I look up on the hillside, and there's all these shells of houses and buildings. And I look down, same thing, a destroyed village. And then I found out that village, water and flooding and rain overflowed a dam and destroyed houses and buildings and killed about 2,000 people. I was picking up on that. And I have other examples. That's one type of paranormal that I have. And look, I'm my own witness. And I know that I can't say it's absolutely definitively so, but I'm allowing myself the possibility that something more qualitatively different from other feelings I've had, that something else may be operating here. But when you put it all together, and I consider all the other experiences I've had in my life that are paranormal in nature, to mine own self be true, I have to accept the possibility that I'm dealing with something that's not typically explainable to ordinary science, physical or social science. I don't say it's definitively the truth, but I'm open to it. And actually being open to that allows me the room to look at other things in my life and other people's lives. And maybe this is a useful way to look at things. I'm not saying anybody else or everybody else will believe me, but I have this one mantra that's come out of all my collection of these stories of what's happened to people and myself. And that is, if one of them is true, what then?
Absolutely.
That's all it takes. If one is true, what then?
That is true. You know, I've had psychics on my team, mediums, that have said the same thing you say. Exactly what you said just now.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
And it's interesting because I find them to be the most honest people I've ever dealt with, you know, in this field, because they're being honest about it. You know, I don't know how I do this. It's just.
And they're not forcing you to believe them. They're just suggesting, take a look.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. So what you just said is perfect. It's absolutely perfect. Are there any stories that you've come across over the years that really stand out to you?
Well, I have a funny one that's just really interesting to me. Probably sitting in that gray basket I was talking about, Stanton Friedman's gray basket of things. I'm not discarding it, and I'm not totally accepting it. But I was once sitting at a table at a Body, Mind, Spirit expos that are run by friends of mine that I knew, good friends of mine in Ashland, Oregon, when I was down there. And at my table, people would come and sit down, and I would interview them for their stories. And I did, out of my 2,000 or so interviews, of which I do a few even to today, this guy sat down. He was wearing a T-shirt with Bela Lugosi. He had a tattoo on his arm of Dracula. And he began to tell me the story about he and his girlfriend going to Transylvania. He took his girlfriend to Transylvania for Halloween. Now, I would bet my bottom dollar that this guy was being honest with me. I don't think he was putting me on. If he was, he was a really good actor. But he said he took his girlfriend there. And I was thinking in the back of my mind, God, this guy has it in for Dracula and Transylvania, tattoos, shirts. And I don't think he was lying to me, putting me on. He said he and his girlfriend slept in the Hotel Transylvania. I think it had another official name. And they woke up the next day, and he had a thin cut on each of his wrists, you know, as if blood samples were taken, you know, things like that. And instead of thinking to myself, well, he's a nutball, you know, fixated on all this stuff, maybe putting people on, maybe not. But I looked at it that this guy was probably fixated on all this in his whole life, because maybe he had a mission to go to Romania and go to that area. Maybe there's more to it, past life stuff. I don't totally discount. but I don't know quite what to make of it. I don't think he was lying. I think he was fixated on this, and it was a major drive to go there. And I asked him if anybody else reported anything, and he said he didn't think anybody else had anything unusual happen to them. I said, do they make a big deal of Halloween over in Transylvania and Romania? And he said, yeah, you know, it's more of an American thing, but people are celebrating Halloween in lots of places now. And so there I am looking at an urban myth right in front of me, a possible urban myth of something that somebody would tell you and you wouldn't believe it. And here I am confronted with a guy who I don't think is putting me on. Now, am I naive? At times, I'm like anybody else. But I'm also more open to other possibilities. So again, that story goes in the gray basket. It's a perfect urban myth. But, you know, let's just wait and see what comes of it. I've had other stories from other people who seem to be drawn to places like Ireland. One woman was drawn to France. Another couple was drawn to France. They had a hobby of looking at stained glass windows in churches and cathedrals. And I said, do you think that maybe there's something more going on to why you seem to be fixated on this notion of stained glass? And, you know, and they thought about it for a moment. I said, you know, we never really looked at it like that. That is a possibility. I mean, I've had deja vu experiences where people feel as if they have connections to places that they can't really elucidate or talk about that much. So I think there are other things going on probably in that way, you know. But again, I leave myself open, but not so open that my brains are going to fall out. You know, I feel like I'm doing right by this phenomena. I am maintaining that there may very well be something more to a lot of this. And if one of these is true, what then?
And that was my next question. When you look at these urban legends, have you gathered enough stories on some of them to really start making you think it's true?
You know, I've heard urban legends, and I've heard of people having similar things happen to them that are similar to the urban legend. And it just sounded crazy to me. How can this really be? Did this person really have this experience, this urban legend that I've heard before, that somebody's told me before? I think the answer is, I think I have come across urban legends, things that could be conceived to be as urban legends. Maybe in the making. Maybe there'll be an urban legend for somebody else later. But I think I've seen some in the making. You know, it's just unusual. It's odd. But I can't explain it and I can't evaluate it. But I also think, for example, synchronicities happen to people. Not only the simple two synchronicities, you know, a coincidence of two things. Oh, how could I run into this person 10,000 miles from home? It can't happen. But I've run into three-part things that are all interrelated and happening together. And in me, in my life, I've had a couple of five-part things, five things happening in a sequence, each of which, compared to any other one in that five, is just not believable to happen by chance when you put all five of them together. And I'll give you an example of that further down if you want to look at that.
Absolutely.
Talk about synchronicity. So, being open to this and researching it and collecting stories has been a wellspring of experiences that a lot of people have, like the entities that you're talking about. People have,
sure,
lots of people have entity experiences, and some of them are variants of others that are similar enough. And then there's multiple people having them. I don't know exactly what you do with that. Like we were talking about that earlier.
Right. Right. Well, see, the thing too was like with what I do as a ghost hunter, that's interesting is that, you know, you go out, you interview people about what's, well, you do that as well. You know, you go out, you interview people about what may be going on there, what they experienced and stuff. And then you start collecting the evidence. And then when you look at the history and it starts to line up, it makes life really interesting. Because when you talk about like urban legends, I mean, a lot of that history is a legend too, like in those old hotels. You know, there's always a legend of the woman who's lost a love, and she's crying, and she's in a room, or they see her in the hallways of the hotel. You know, there's always those legends. I've been in hotels where there's a legend of this gentleman who was kind of cray-cray. What he did was he was working at the mines, but he would bring his dynamite back home with him every night at this hotel. So he would sleep with the dynamite under his bed.
Woof.
Every night. That was his thing, right? So he was just one of those types of people. But he also had a girlfriend across the way at the other hotel. So there's people that see him and her, both of them, crossing back and forth between these two hotels all the time.
Yeah.
And then when you do the research, you find out that this all actually happened. You know, that he did have this girlfriend and all this is going on. So it's interesting to, you know, to look at that history and look at that quote legend, you know, and try to piece it together.
You know, you look at legends and you look at Native peoples. I interviewed a Native North American family living near where I live on Bainbridge Island. And one of her stories, they've shared plenty of things, but one of those stories was near Tacoma, Washington. You can cross over a bridge that takes you to the Olympic Peninsula, you know, up near where I live towards Bainbridge Island and Olympic National Park and so on and so forth. She said as a little girl, as a teenager, about 15, she would drive along one of these highways in the Tacoma area of Washington, south of Seattle. And suddenly she would find her hair was stand up on end. And she keep on going, and the hair settled back. And she said this happened to her numerous times driving in that same area. And then she was reading the newspapers one day, and they found that the authorities discovered hidden buried bones about the same area where her hair would stand up on end. And she thought she was definitely reacting to that experience. And once they uncovered the remains, her hair stopped doing that when she was in that area. So there's so much going on. And there's such a variety of it. And sometimes individuals and sometimes multiple people. It's a whole panoply of things. You know, it's hard to just simply put them in single categories. And yet, as our ways of understanding reality grow along with our evolution and future years of learning and thinking about the universe, maybe we'll begin to understand, categorize these things better. Maybe understand that there seems to be a whole realm of entities that emerge somehow, somewhere, somewhen, that we don't seem to have the tools currently to really understand them.
Do you think science is open to that, though? I mean, it seems like, you know, there's a group of people like us that are out to try and, you know, understand this stuff, but then there's the scientists on the side that's just no, it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. It's all in your head. It's all this. So do you think there's ever going to be a meeting of the minds on that stuff?
Well, I think it's moving in that direction. I I'm not normally a TikToker person to watch this stuff on the internet, but you know, if you watch one thing, you get more of them, right? So yeah. What do I have? I open up TikTok, and what do I have? I've got all these famous scientists who I like, love, and respect a lot. For example, Michio Kaku, Neil deGrasse Tyson, Brian Cox, to some extent, Carl Sagan. And I'm listening to all these people being reasonably a little more open-minded. You know, I think Neil deGrasse Tyson isn't as willing to go as far as, say, people like Michio Kaku, who are there and they're saying, hey, there's a certain point we just don't know, and I'm open-minded to learning more about it. I love the way Brian Cox says, you know, the part of the universe that we can see, we think there's about 2 trillion galaxies, but you know what? We don't know. There could be infinite numbers of galaxies. I like the scientific types, and I, like I say, include Carl Sagan to a large part, but not completely. Some are willing to go further than others. Like Michio Kaku, I think he goes, and Brian Cox, further than most of the others. And I like the direction they're going. I think they are avant-garde of how more and more intelligent, questioning scientists may be in the future. To be open to the fact that once upon a time, when it was all about earth, air, fire, and water, and when astrology was an accepted part of astronomy, that a million years from now, 100 years from now, we're going to be willing to take a closer look and maybe have the right categories. Maybe we will be the goldfish beyond the fish tank and see more and understand more. I have no doubt about it, but to think we're the be-all, end-all of understanding what the universe is like, well, if you believe that, you've got something coming, because it just ain't likely so.
Well, look at how much things have changed the last 25 years. Because I know when I started out doing this, you had to kind of hide what you were doing because people, you know, people were not open to it like they are now.
Here's a great example of that, John Mack from Harvard. I think he was instrumental in starting the psychiatric hospital at Harvard or in Boston. I'm not exactly sure, but I remember in the early days, he was talking about, gee, he had done at least 50 hypnosis in-depth studies of people who reported that maybe they were having encounters with aliens, abductions. You know, and at the time, Harvard could not handle it, and they tried to get him, revoke his tenure. He said, hey, these people are telling similar experiences. I'm just not going to write them off as nutcases. Then you had Bud Hopkins come along, David Jacobs, and these guys bravely went into an area that most other people would be terrified to do. And now you look at Harvard, and you've got Avi Loeb, who I don't know him personally, but he's saying, hey, that long, skinny thing floating by our solar system, hey, that might have been a spaceship. You know, nobody's trying to run Avi Loeb out of Harvard now. So maybe they felt trying to revoke somebody's tenure just because they're dealing with really weird, bizarre subjects that they shouldn't be. Like John Mack, maybe just maybe the paradigm has shifted a little bit. Okay, let's let these people keep their academic freedom and let them test their hypotheses and let us see, maybe, just maybe, reality is a little broader than we've been quite willing to accept in the earlier days.
Absolutely. But yeah, I've noticed, like you know, I've noticed I remember having to go down to a courthouse, to City Hall, to tell people that we were going to be filming, you know, in this opera house. And I remember how they really looked at us really funny, and I said, "Well, no, it's not what you think. You know, we're just trying to just get evidence. We're not going to be making noises. We're not going to be, you know, screaming and running around the building or anything like that." But back then, it was, you really had to be step around on your tiptoes to even tell people. Now you got to do is make a phone call. "Oh yeah, okay, come on down. It's really cool. The paranormal's right here." Blah blah blah. You know. It's a big difference from what it was like 25 years ago, you know, doing this.
So we are seeing paradigm change somewhat. We're seeing disclosure. Mm-hmm. We're seeing somewhat more openness. Mm-hmm. And I'm not exactly sure what's fueling that, but it may be, and here's an interesting theory, it may be that the phenomena, as people get a little bit more open and receptive to the possibilities of it, maybe, just maybe, we're perceiving more. I'm not saying that it's necessarily opening itself up as some consciousness saying we're ready for this. Maybe there's a process we don't quite understand at work in our evolution and development of our own consciousness that, come on, get with the program. There's more going on. That we were too afraid to accept. Mm-hmm. But we have to have cooler heads prevail and look into some of these things, because reality just might be more than what we have deemed it to be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Where do you think your studies are going? I mean, are you getting to where you believe more on this stuff, or are you still kind of...
I love that question. That's just a great, great, great question. I give vent to my creativity. Mm-hmm. I have a form of creativity that I'm not going to say is unique, but I let these stories drift in and out of my consciousness. I mean, I've gotten thousands of stories from interviews. Mm-hmm. And I let it lead me maybe in some different directions. I don't like get too fixated on what the definition of, you know, how broad this book should be. Where should I stop? Mm-hmm. You know, how far can it go? And so I collected all my sea stories, mm-hmm. ships, boats, even to canoes on the Zambezi River in Africa. Anything to do with water, some strange ideas of water. This one woman was looking for holy waters of different types. Mm-hmm. And trying to ascertain, is there something about water that we don't normally know or accept? Anyway, so the title of that book evolved to Travel Tales, Sea Stories, The Ways of Water. And I even included storms, the big tsunami and huge storm and flooding in Asia that took place, I think, on Christmas Day of 2004, I think mm-hmm. it was, The Ways of Water. So I allowed this book to go a little bit more into areas where you wouldn't normally think of water so much. I've done a book, I'm almost finished with it, Travel Tales Driving Abroad, mm-hmm. but I didn't let it stop there. From cars to camels, I started thinking of animals as forms of conveyance. Mm-hmm. And this leads to some conclusions, you know, in the writing. Directions of creativity to let people's minds wander. And so I have a form of creativity that I think comes out in my collection of other people sharing their stories. Mm-hmm. That I don't think anybody else really ever done anything like this. I don't know. but it's fun. And I discovered a phenomenal way of publishing. And I'll let the audience know if you're looking to publish. There's a self-publishing platform on the internet. It's called Draft, the number two, digital, one word. Doesn't cost anything. Allows you to publish the book in either ebook form or print. Even allows you to take your front cover that you design and move it to the back cover and just fill in your type and put pictures. You know, you create your back cover using the exact color you had in the beginning. The point being, it costs nothing, and they take a small percentage of your sales. They help distribute it. They help sell it, and they earn their income that way. And interestingly, I went to some little meeting for business, private small business people who rented office space in the building, you know, where they can have their office and amenities and computer and internet and all that stuff. And it so happened that there was a computer guy who worked on Draft to Digital living on Bainbridge Island. And this was about 3 or 4 years ago. And somebody asked a question, well, how many books has Draft to Digital produced? And he said, I think about this time, about 900,000 books, which is no small amount. And Draft to Digital gives you your own book page. And I have mine. And may I say what mine is in case people want to see what it looks like? It's called books, the number two, read.com. Everybody gets one of those, books2read.com/, and then your name. In my case, Michael hyphen Brian, B-R-E-I-N, or Breen. And you have all your books there, including I have both of Rosemary's books that she did with me. She published these, her own publishing company. And I'm allowed to have these books on there, even though I don't think that company, Draft to Digital, necessarily earns anything from the sales of them. So it's great. It's a great idea. If you want to self-publish in a different way, look into that. It's cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what's next for you?
I still have lots of areas of the world that I haven't quite written up yet. For example, I have a lot of travel tales about India. I have travel stories about traveling in Turkey. I've got other countries that I haven't pulled them together yet. And I'm not pulling any punches, to be honest with you. If something happens in a country that if it's dangerous and people have shared experiences with me where they've overcome danger, I feel compelled to put some of those experiences in these books. So, for example, there's some bad things that have happened to some people in Paris. But Paris is my favorite city in the world, and I think it's safe for most people. But occasionally I'm going to interview people who are giving me important stories from the standpoint of the psychology of travel, where people need to pay more attention to their safety and security. So there's some of that. And like I say, there's some of the paranormal, and there's some of the funny stories. I've done a book called Travel Tales, Idiots Abroad, and I'm at your service. I'm one of these idiots doing some ridiculous things. I'm a crazy, stupid scoundrel at times. But I think that's important, and it's funny, and it's light. So it's not all serious things. I did a book, Travel Tales, Solo Women Travelers. The Me Too of Travel, and absolutely pull no punches on that. I lay out the situation of lots of women who were traveling in North Africa, some of whom have had horrible things happen. Why? Because you need to know. And I'm going to share with you what I've discovered.
Sure. So. Absolutely.
That's what's next. More.
How can people find you, sir?
How can people what?
How can people find me? You? Yes.
BooksToRead.com/Michael-Brian. I've got a website, which I have a lot of interesting, fun things on, the psychology of travel. And that's just my main website, which is www.michaelbrien.com, M-I-C-H-A-E-L-B-R-E-I-N. And you might enjoy looking at that.
Absolutely. Well, I want to thank you for coming on. Sorry for the
technical stuff
today. Had a bunch of things go wrong. It happens. Love to have you on again, I hope.
Thank you for having me. I love doing this. This is fun. I hope I'm sure I will have some new insights and fun things to talk about. Hope I've been helpful to people.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me.
We'd love to have you back, okay? I'm just so
Thank
sorry.
You.
And yeah, okay. You have a great
bye
one.
Bye for now.
Okay, bye. Well, that worked after all the technical difficulties. I got to work on the computer tonight, obviously. Anyway, I want to thank everybody for coming tonight and sticking with us through all this. Big messes on computers. And yeah, this computer has always not had a good track record anyway. Tomorrow, please take note. Simeon Hine is going to be with us, but it will be at 7:30 p.m. Pacific. I have a doctor's appointment I have to be at out of town. And the freeway that I have to come back on is really congested. And I'll be coming back at like 4 or 5. So I needed to, you know, kind of stretch it out as to what time to come on. So we'll be on with Simeon Hine tomorrow talking about crop circles and other ET stuff and UFOs and all that. So, yeah, so that will be tomorrow. All right, this is funny now. If you like the show, share it with 5 people. If you hate the show, share it with 5 of your enemies. We are equal opportunity here. We're just trying to get the word out about all the shows, especially after I fix this one. But I want to thank you again. Thank you all for coming, and I'm going to sign off here and have a great evening. And see you tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. Pacific. Bye.